Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to MBR, or as we like to call it around here, Nothing But Rants, the show where I find topics that I'm oddly passionate about, and I pontificate upon them. These are not hot takes, but rather takes that I'm hot about.
Let's shut up and grind some tape.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome in to the Film Guy Network on a fabulous Thursday evening here inside the studio. We got an absolutely loaded show for you guys, as we usually do. You know what time it is this time around, Thursday evenings. We always like to start it off by saying last show, best show. You boys had a good week so far.
It's been a quick week.
Yeah?
It's felt like it's gone by really fast.
It felt like it zipped by for you, huh? Mm-hmm. How about you, Kerb?
Hasn't been too bad. Pollen's kind of kicking my ass, but
boy, is it.
Yeah.
My man sneezing like crazy. We went out and had a catch yesterday before the show. Came back in, about 9 sneezes.
I hate it, dude.
Nine sneezes. It's whipping your butt, huh?
It's the worst time of year.
Why is that? Why do you think some people struggle with pollen worse than others?
Well, like, I know that some people, like, there's certain, like, plants and stuff that you have an allergic reaction to. Like,
I got to basically, like, take a bath in it to it make me freak out.
Yeah.
Like, the first year I ever owned a house, I made the mistake of not wearing facial protection when I scout my yard in the spring. Whoo, buddy. I woke up the next morning with a face full of concrete. But you seem to be rock like it was instant for you yesterday. That was
blooms,
nuts.
Man. This time of year is the worst. I hate it.
A little Zyrtec up from a homie.
Yeah, as long as I take my allergy pill, I'm good.
Oh, I'm doubling up on that. Still not helping me. It's tough.
Well, you know what? Hopefully, we'll have a good time tonight. Make it take your mind off your allergies. We got a great show. Guys. Last show, best show for you guys. John Mateer watches the show, by the way. Don't know if y'all know this.
You think that's what led him to this conclusion?
No, but I like to, you know, think of myself. I mean, you know me. I love me.
Still don't have
to. I know, right? Dang. It. Oh, wait. You know me. I love me.
Oh, there you go.
You know what I mean? New Cam Newton comparison just dropped. Did y'all know that? There's a new comp out there for Cam Newton.
It's not DJ Lagway?
No, it's fresh off the streets, DJ Lagway. But DJ Lagway did make the show notes. So how about that? Clemson apparently soft launched a quarterback. I don't know if y'all saw this.
It sounded that way, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, hey, let's just slip it into a question by the offensive coordinator. We're going to run with it, not only on today's show, but on Film Breakdowns moving forward. I see some hearts flying in the chat. I like that. Y'all like the stream while we're, you know, taking a little elongated intro here on a Thursday evening. Biggest leaps. I'm excited for this. There's a lot of different ways we can take this segment.
Yeah.
As usual on a Thursday. I had no idea how you implied it. Who wrote it in the notes?
I did.
He did.
There you go. I had no idea how you implied it in the notes, but I'm excited for that segment. I feel like oftentimes that brings us some of our best content. And we have wide receiver takes on the show tonight from yours truly. I've watched the top three. I feel like there's a consensus three at the top of this wide receiver class in 2026's draft class. I'm going to give you my opinions on the three of those guys tonight. That being Jordan Tyson, Carnell Tate, and Mekhi Lemon. I don't know how you guys feel those should be ranked, but maybe fire off in the chat and give me your opinions. I know there is a college basketball game or two going on right now, but it's Thursday at 8 o'clock, so we're going to work.
Absolutely.
And, always. I mean, to be honest with you, we have several hundred people that watch us during the offseason in the live chat. We appreciate those guys. I mean, the people watching right now are true lovers of this network, but we work for those who watch us on demand. And we work with high-quality reps for those folks as well. Nonetheless, if you're watching us live currently, or if you're watching us on rewatch, you got to do a couple things for me. Like, subscribe, tell a friend. Right? If you haven't liked already, go ahead and do it. If you haven't subscribed already, go ahead and do it. If you haven't told a friend about this place, what are you doing? Go ahead and do it. Let's start with the news. Jonathan, you have the options, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you options. John Mateer, DJ Lagway, the new Cam Newton comp just dropped, or Clemson quarterback.
Well, since you believe John Mateer watches the show, I think we should start there. You know, go ahead and flex our own network a little bit.
I think you're wrong.
Oh.
I think we should start with the fact that there was a quarterback named at a Power Four school that a lot of people, you know, root for in this big-time football program. I think that kind of takes precedence in the news other than, you know, loving on ourselves a little bit with John Mateer. What say you?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay, let's start there. Do you know who Christopher Vezina is?
I do know who that is.
He's a starting quarterback for the Clemson Tigers. This comes from Chad Morris, their offensive coordinator. He was at his media availability, And I don't know exactly the question. I can paraphrase the answer. It was essentially, hey, have y'all named a starter? And he said, no, we haven't, but CV's our guy leaving the spring.
Yeah.
And normally, if you're the guy leaving the spring, you're going to be named the guy come August.
Yeah, you got to do something horribly wrong to lose the job.
Yeah, and from what it also sounds like to me is that if there is anybody pushing CV, Christopher Vezina, it would be Tate Reynolds, the true freshman. There's a left-hander, number 15. Will you give me his name so I'm not just calling him the left-hander number 15? He was the three last year. Sounds like he might have been leaped by Tate Reynolds during this spring practice evaluation
period. Denson.
Chris Denson. So, yeah, there's that. Now, I have notes on Christopher Vezina. Ooh. And tomorrow I will have a film breakdown on Christopher Vezina. Do you want that right now? You have that roster pulled up, right?
I just did.
Okay, pull it back up and give me – don't tell me, but give me the roster weights because eyeball weights on tape say 6'4", 225 on Vezina.
Okay.
So let me know what they say he is. I think he's that big. Here's what I got on the notes.
6'4", 210.
So I'm 15 pounds heavy on him. Huh. Carries it well. Carries it thick at 215. All right, here we go. Big tree. Big tree. Big tree stand tall. Big tree stand firm. All right, it's important at Clemson. We're going to talk about that. Athletic enough, though, this tree. He's athletic enough. He can move around. And that's really important at Clemson to be a, quote, good enough mover. Because I don't know about you guys, but I don't associate offensive football more. I don't associate school, rather, more with the idiom of, man, they sure do like to run that quarterback who's really not that good at running.
Yeah.
I mean, asked Cade Klubnik to run like he was Lamar Jackson at times. I find that – and I'm not talking about scrambling. Quarterbacks do that to themselves.
No.
Pockets do that to themselves. I'm talking about design quarterback runs for guys who are not really good runners.
I mean, they did it with Trevor Lawrence too.
See what I mean?
But for Cade, I think that more had to do with the fact that they didn't have a run game. He was the best option at
times. And the guy who was not really good at running back for them is about to be like a third-round draft pick in Adam Randall. So.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's like going to magically get better. That's why I'm saying it's really important that Big Tree be athletic enough. And he is, because they are going to have to make him a willing runner. They always do. They always will. Not only that, we're going to talk about their offensive line play here in just a second. Let's talk about him as a thrower, though. Big, physical, has enough horsepower, and he needs to because he loses the nose often. Down. Loses the nose down, which is okay 15 and in. When we're throwing like inward breaking routes, you'll see a lot of wide receivers like falling and diving for balls, but that's okay. At least it doesn't sail over the middle of the field. I would rather you actually be like a nose loser down than up over the middle of the field. But it really, really hurts us outside the numbers. Balls start to die on us quite a bit. But like I said, when his feet are in the ground, he's big enough, physical enough to get the ball driven through that bad ball flight. I mean, it's not a tight spin. You'll see this tomorrow, Jonathan. Sorry, you got to work on a Friday morning. You'll see this tomorrow on the film. But here's what I want to talk about. I didn't feel like he missed a read or made a terrible bad decision. He has a start against SMU, by the way. Mm-hmm. That's what we're going to watch tomorrow. But here's what I want to talk about. Plays 26, 27, 28, and 29 that we're going to watch tomorrow. Let me read you the notes. Clemson quarterback dilemma. Tackles versus twitch. The left tackle get beat like a drum. And when Clemson offensive linemen get beat, you've seen this over the years on film studies here. When Clemson offensive linemen get beat, they get beat now. Mm-hmm. There's no like, oh my God, he lost slow to a bull rush, or at least he made him run the hoop. Nope, they get like double moved, almost like a, what do you call it when you,
like a Euro step?
Yeah, almost like when they get Euro step, they get turned sideways and ran flat by. And when you do that as offensive lineman, when you have bad lateral mobility, is what mm-hmm. we see all the time, they get beat quickly, and no quarterback can really survive in those situations. So that's play number 26. Right, left tackle gets beat like a drum. Play number 27, left guard gets slapped, beat like a drum, gets turned sideways. They're home within 2 seconds. Play 28, my notes just say best get alert. Like best have some alertness about yourself at the quarterback position when you play here. And that's the right tackle, the Blake Miller kid, who's supposed to be like, I guess some people got him rated higher than Monroe Freely. They're on some stuff. And then play 29, I think at this point we found a real dilemma. And that being this, like we have left tackle beat one play, left guard beat one play, right tackle beat the next play, center beat the next play. And I'm not, again, not talking about like straining and losing late. I'm talking about getting beat now. And every time we watch them against premier defenses, That's what happens to them. Mm. So they're going to have to figure that out more so than even the quarterback play.
Do you think that, like, just based off of what you – the information that you just relayed there and what we know about Clemson over the past few years and how we feel like the roster, while it's very talented in the NFL's eyes, has deteriorated over the years and has gotten worse a little bit. Do you think that that could result in Cade Klubnik becoming, like, one of these guys, like, later on down the road in the NFL?
My questions about Cade are, do you have enough horsepower to do all this stuff? You know? Like, and the offense, man, the offense actually was a whole nother question.
For sure.
Like, for example, the very first play that I open up and study of that Clemson tape, we're running a fake screen. Normally, you got to kind of run the screen before you throw the fake screen, first and foremost. The other thing, we're running it into cover two. The quarterback's expecting a hole shot. Wesco just runs down the field and doesn't look once. We take a sack. Like that was 2025 Clemson football. I have that note as well. You're going to see a lot of that tomorrow, Jonathan, where I think of five or six times, literally my notes say 2025 Clemson football, where either me and the wide receiver aren't on the same page, or remember defensively watching them study for the Khalil Barnes tape, we're just busting coverages because we can't get lined up correctly. Mm-hmm. Same thing offensively. We take dumb pre-snap penalties. We got, hey, it's man coverage. You need to keep running. For some reason, you're gearing down. Like, just stupid stuff, left and right. Chad Morris blamed it on entitlement, even though he wasn't there. Yeah. Had a bunch of entitlement on the roster.
Hmm. Okay.
Even though nobody on the roster had won a national title.
Yeah, what are they entitled to?
This was what Clemson fans asked. As a matter of fact, thank you for bringing it up. It's the first thing they said was like, Why are y'all battling entitlement? Ain't nobody in the building won nothing. What's going on? So, yeah, I think the offensive line thing to me has been a consistent problem.
Oh, it's been so bad.
For a long, long time there. So
them and South Carolina have both had issues.
South Carolina's worse because they couldn't even get their eyes in the right spot. Clemson, at least, when I watch them, they look like they know what they're doing. They're not physically good enough to do it. That's the problem I watch. Like, Braden Jacobs, the first blue chipper they've signed on the offensive line in a long time. And he's going to be good. The sophomore from Milton, he's going to be really, really good up there. But that's the highest-rated offensive lineman they've signed in God knows how long. Yeah. Blake Miller. So, yeah. In my opinion. So, there we go. I'm probably missing somebody that didn't pan out, but I highly doubt Clemson fans throw them at me. We missed some stuff on that Texas depth chart we got to go clean up. So, I've been getting shouted at. I'm an idiot.
It's okay.
My bad, Texas fans. We tried.
Yeah.
I felt like we were cooking there for a minute, but you miss one thing, and then it's honed in on there like a big magnifying glass. So there's that. What's our next news item? What you want next?
Now talk Mateer.
You want your options?
Oh, yeah, give me my options.
You got John Mateer watches the show. DJ Lagway found the new meta. Just kidding. DJ Lagway. And then the new Cam Newton comp just dropped.
You know, I want to hear this Cam Newton comp.
Yeah, I want to hear this too.
I'm really intrigued by this.
Y'all hear about this?
Is this the most overused comparison for any big quarterback?
Yes.
Huh.
Or Josh Allen. Josh Allen's the new two big.
You know what's happening there, right?
Yeah.
No, I get it.
Honestly, Vezina was wearing 17, and I was like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, man.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're a quarterback,
what's going on there?
If nowadays you're a quarterback that's over 6'5" and you kind of are mobile, people are like, dude, this is Josh Allen. Mm. This is Josh Allen reincarnated,
so. or Cam Newton.
Yeah, one of the two.
Mm. One or the two. Or Marcus Mariota.
Mm, yeah.
Mariota had like speed though.
Maybe Sagapatule kind of reshapes all of that. Maybe the new.
Maybe.
Oh, this is Sag. Maybe. He's Sag.
I got it for you. The new Cam Newton comp. You ready?
Yeah.
Kyle Whittingham says.
Oh, here we go.
Bryce Underwood reminds him a lot of Cam Newton.
See, and again, like.
And then, by the way, it's by way of in an interview with JD Pakel on 3Sports. Shout out to the homie Pakel.
Shout out, JD.
If you're watching right now, shoot me a text, JD. What's up, babe?
It seems like, again, but this is what I mean by overused comp of we have a big quarterback who is athletic, who can do a little bit of everything. But even though Bryce Underwood is one of these bigger quarterbacks and is athletic, he's not Cam Newton.
No. You want the full quote?
Yes.
Reminds me of Cam. Went on to say, I didn't coach Cam, wasn't around Cam. But charisma, stature, big dude, live arm, great athlete, flashes that smile a lot like Cam.
Okay. So, all right.
He didn't say he is, just more of like,
okay,
the so aura. He got Cam Newton aura is what he's trying to say. He's just 63, so he didn't know how to say aura.
We didn't have John Sumrall with Urban Meyer instance where it was.
No.
I'm watching Bryce Young. This is Cam Newton.
No.
I see it.
No. Watching Michigan, Oklahoma, been like, you know what? This is Cam Newton. I'm watching Cam Newton right now.
Yeah.
No. It wasn't all a John Sumrall.
I'll give him some grace here because he didn't go full-fledged Cam Newton comparison like football player.
Just dipped his toe in it.
Yeah. There's some traits here that I could see are very resembling of Cam.
I mean, it's such an overplayed topic at this point that it feels like a joke anytime someone does it. But
hey, speaking of an overplayed topic, remember how many times we got told that like Carson Beck hated his life when he was a Georgia quarterback?
Yeah, that was kind of the media's spin.
So I think there was some reality there, by the way. And we're going to talk about some reality here with DJ Lagway and some serious topics, which are mental health. So we do not want to get out in front of this with the jokes. All right, or any type of misalignment with this. Because I think there was some reality to the Carson Beck story.
Sure.
I think there was a time period when he gets down to Miami and his arm's in a damn sling and his football life's not going so well. He just had the worst season of his very limited starting career, by the way. We went from 14 starts, you're a first-round draft pick, to played like crap. Now you got to go rebuild your whole image at a new team with no elbow ligament. All right, so there was some mental things there. I even had some people in Miami tell me there was a time period there during the summer where they couldn't find Carson. Where's Carson? You know what I mean? Carson had to like disappear for 3 or 4 days to lock himself back in on what was going on in life and football and fall back in love with football. But that narrative got like way drawn out into, damn, it sure was a tough life being a Georgia quarterback.
Right.
DJ Lagway had some quotes that were very interesting today as well. Will you read these? Who had these today?
Christian.
I got them.
First of all, who had these today? This is DJ Lagway at a Baylor availability?
Yeah, I would assume this is a Baylor availability. Right.
But these are his words?
Yes, these are his words. He said, quote, "I was in a bubble down there. I didn't feel like a normal person. I didn't even know what campus looked like. I was really closed off. I didn't really hang out with my teammates. Yeah, I was depressed. I just stayed in my own lane, stayed out of the way."
So it's not as bad. That was more of a him thing than a like Florida made me do this.
Right.
Like being Florida's quarterback made me feel this way.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
I felt like the spin towards the Beck thing got that bad. I felt like the TV and the visual or the narrative ran with
again.
This is being Georgia's quarterback made you feel this way.
Yeah, this was Kirby Smart and his coaching staff's fault.
And it is worth noting that Carson Beck never really came in front of a mic and was I hated Georgia so much. Like so, these are two different things. I don't think he's really talking about how, man, Florida made playing football not fun for me. I think this is just a guy who wasn't in a place that was the right fit for him and was dealing with some things mentally.
I'll say this much, like, any young person, any person listening right now, the number one thing not to do is to isolate yourself in moments like this. Like when you feel like, and he probably had very similar, things in his path that Carson had from a standpoint of not really understanding failure. Like what is failure? This is new to me. I'm not as good as I should be. What is that? That's new. Also, my body isn't working right. His body didn't work right for the whole time he was down there in Florida. He was constantly hurt. And being injured as an athlete does wicked things to your brain from an emotional standpoint. I shouldn't say your brain. From thoughts and how you feel. And because much of your identity is tied to your success in football, right or wrong.
Right. And, the one comment that I would say I don't necessarily agree with, and this ties into both DJ Lagway's circumstances and also Carson's as well, is the people that want to come out here and they read these quotes. And I'm sure like it does feel – you feel some type of way as a fan when it feels like a former player who didn't exactly live up to expectations might be speaking down a little bit in your eyes on your program. But the comments of, well, he was driving a Lambo. Yeah. How could life be so hard? Well, a car doesn't solve all your issues. If you're not right in the head, if you're not in the right mental space, if everything else in your life you feel like is not going the right way, just because you drive a nice car and you make all the money in the world now, doesn't mean that everything else is smooth sailing.
I will say this. They might have to go to class and they might not have professional rights. They might not have health benefits. They might not have a union. But that is professional sports right there.
Yeah.
The moment you start making hundreds of thousands of dollars, people do not care.
No, they don't.
If you start making millions,
yeah,
people really don't care.
Dude,
they really do not care about how you feel.
People didn't really care before all the money. Like, this is like mental health in college football and college athletics has never been anything where it's, you know, I mean, go back 15 years, any player that loses a game or makes a mistake, they get death threats. There's there's things said on social media, like, and that's before all of these guys were making exponential amounts of money. So, I mean, that's all. That's not anything new.
Yeah, let's just not lock ourselves in, not be out and about. We're humans. We got to interact with other people. Honest to God, not to make this about me, but it's the main reason why I brought you guys in here, to do this together. Because, bro, the walking alone in anything is tough, man. Don't be doing that.
Yeah.
Reach out. Talk to somebody.
Definitely be hanging with your teammates at least.
For
like,
sure.
You ain't got to have friends outside of football.
Honestly, it contextualizes the Billy Napier comment.
Yeah.
Y'all remember that one? For the audience who doesn't, Billy Napier, was it before the Georgia game?
Yes. It had to have been.
He was like, we think we got DJ back. DJ, we got guys, you know, the guys took him out to dinner the other night.
Yeah.
So, bro, he must have been locked in his dorm or fancy apartment.
Yeah.
That's not a dorm.
I would imagine there's
not a dorm. That's not a dorm. Yeah. That's not a dorm. My bad.
Yeah, I'm sure maybe it sounds like there was maybe a conversation at some point with DJ and some of the coaches of like, dude, go out there. You got to hang with somebody. Don't just weather this storm by yourself.
Mm. What you want next? We gave you the Cam Newton drop. We gave you the
Lagway
drop.
I didn't even
drop.
Get to guess the DJ Lagway one.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I guess it's just John Mateer.
John Mateer.
It's John Mateer time. All jokes aside, we talked a lot about Mateer last year, mechanically, right? How he's from the ear Mateer is what we call them. Now, when you do throw from the ear, all right, when you're out here, and it's not from the ear a la Peyton Manning. This is from the ear in terms of I can draw a straight line directly out in a 90-degree. No bend in the elbow ever with this cat. Now, when you throw like that, you throw a football at all. If you get your hand up underneath it, that thing's going to flail like a duck. It's just going to go all over the place. If you don't get a stern C or an inverse C on that sucker and get on the side of the football, or as most people call it, the top of the football, get on top of the ball, you don't really have to. You just kind of got to get to the side. And as I tell people, feel it pinky to thumb. Feel it release pinky to thumb off of you. That's all you really need. But if you're out here and you're not up here, you really have to be able to grip that football. That thumb's really, really important. And Mateer's thumb was all jacked up last year. And I felt like because he's a competitor, because they were in a playoff run, and he ended up walking them to that, dragging them, I would say, at times, and that defense, he had to play. And I think he came back a little bit too early on that thumb. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan, I tasked you today, and he talked about this. We don't have his quotes or the video. We probably should do better about doing that type of stuff for the audience. But talked about it today, how he wasn't really himself. He had to go back and grind it out mechanically and see what was wrong. Said he didn't love his arm slot last year, and he's got to get better.
Mm-hmm.
But how bad were the numbers pre- and post-thumb injury?
I don't want to say they are drastic, but they're very telling. Mm-hmm. I would say like you could definitely – like if someone were to just look at these two different sets of numbers, you could probably get to the guess of there is an injury somewhere.
Before you give them to me, I would expect a dip in overall like rips, number of attempts, and overall completion percentage. I would also expect a dip in his running attempts.
I don't have running attempts or passing attempts, but you're correct in the overall completion percentage. So these are the pre-thumb surgery numbers for John Mateer. This is over a four-game stretch, by the way. He had a 67.4% completion rate, threw for 1,215 yards, 6 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. He also added on 190 rushing yards and 5 touchdowns. Now these are the post-thumb surgery numbers. This is over an 8-game stretch. 59.4% completion rate, 1,670 yards, 8 touchdowns to 8 interceptions, 241 rushing yards, and 3 touchdowns there.
Turned it over at a higher rate and didn't complete as many passes.
Yeah, and didn't throw for as many yards.
So our I would imagine if we had the super advanced analytics, our average depth of target was directly impacted.
Yeah,
we started throwing shorter routes, stuff like that. Their offense, to me, was night and day. He felt almost superhero-like prior to the thumb injury in the sense that he has flaws. It doesn't matter. He'll find a way to win in college football. On a Saturday, Like the first 6 weeks of the season also could be schedule related.
I was about to say his first four games are Illinois State, Michigan, which is a fine team.
The Michigan game, I felt this way. Continue.
Temple and then Auburn.
Auburn
was the same way. He has a throw late on an out and up in that Auburn game. Yeah. It's like, holy hell.
And then he did not play in Kent State because Michael Hawkins started, and then obviously the injury after that. So, I mean, yeah, he did look like Superman, but.
That Auburn defense was legit last year.
Yeah, but and they held.
I would have liked to see, point proven. I would like to see him full year healthy. Maybe we get it this year. Maybe he can be consistently that good because it looked like he was going to do that. Now, I will say this. He started talking about his arm slot. I'm going to be honest with you, bud. I don't care how it comes out, where it comes out with it regards to you. Your lower body is awful. Your lower platform is so inconsistent. You out here jumping and spinning like a corkscrew. It's like watching a spring try to throw a football. Get your lower body disciplined and consistent. I watch you spin the pill in spring ball, and your feet are nice and consistent, and your feet is nice and calm and in the ground, like eight screws in the ground, spinning off of it and keeping them in the ground. And then I watch you play football, and you out here doing all kinds of who know what's. So let's stop that. The arm slot's the arm slot. I understand the thumb was all messed up, but I think we could have, like, made okay adjustments if our lower body would have been a little bit more disciplined. That Alabama tape, that Alabama tape is ugh.
Yeah, and I think that's
from a jumpy standpoint.
That's kind of where my hang up on it is like it's not just the thumb injury that we can point to. There's mechanical issues, lower body that has nothing to do with the thumb. And also, your thumb injury has nothing to do with decision making.
Yeah, or just blatant misreads.
Correct.
There are a lot of yards left on tape in year three in that system going into year four.
Correct. And I think that's where I'm kind of like, I'm worried about John Mateer. But the talent's there. And absolutely, if you can fix, you know, some upper mechanical issues, he'll probably be a more efficient passer, which is scary for defenses.
They're going to be able to run the ball this year?
I was going to say, that's a big question for them. Overall offensive line play, like, if we can't protect him, I think that these issues are only going to continue because I would imagine there's a lineage between the two where if you got a whole bunch of chaos happening in front of you and you're constantly on the run and you're all out of whack to begin with, your mechanics are probably going to be all out of whack because you're focused on getting the ball out, making sure we're staying on schedule. You're not worried about how it looks coming out.
Love that we're being critical. All right, let's make sure we're being proper in the things that we're addressing is all I would say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, hey, let's be self-critical. But let's correct the right things. You know what I mean? Not that I'm his coach. Nobody called me an ass. Who gives a shit? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of who cares, you want my takes on the wide receiver class?
Let's hear your takes on the wide receiver class.
I got them for you. You want the ratings? I got grades on these guys. I think there's three guys at the top. And Jonathan, I want you to be a little biased and tell me who the fourth name was because I scouted him today. And I don't know if you're going to like my takes on him. Jordan Tyson, the wide receiver out of Arizona State. Carnell Tate, the wide receiver out of Ohio State. And Mekhi Lemon, I would argue, are like a three-headed monster in their own little like classification right now with regards to first-round discussions at wide receiver. Would we agree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Now, prior to an injury, there probably was a fourth name that you would have mentioned in this likes.
Oh, the Bell dude from Louisville.
Chris Bell. I'm going to be honest with you, Jonathan. I didn't love it today.
Now
I didn't love it. A little stiff.
To be fair, my infatuation with him really occurred over the two games that I watched of Louisville.
Oh, there's a couple yak clips in that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, whoa, so, how you tackle this monster?
Despite my love for him as a player, I wouldn't say that I did an in-depth look into who he is overall as a player.
So I think he's like second round, day two kind of guy.
Yeah.
But that's why I cut it off on the floor.
I'd put Omar Cooper ahead of him.
Yes, 100%. I think Omar Cooper is maybe in this discussion for a more well-rounded, better slot receiver. Might take him ahead of Mekhi Lemon for me.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so here we go. Jordan Tyson, 4.63. My highest rated wide receiver. I think he's got the best tape. Now, here's the problem. Freshman year, I think it was at Colorado, we had a knee injury so bad where we tore all three of them. ACL, MCL, PCL.
Dang.
Gown. Now, sophomore year, where like second year at Arizona State, first year at Arizona State, we're balling out. We're balling out. Arizona State's going to a playoff game. Fractured collarbone. Out. This year, we get to like seven games in. We're cooking. We're Texas Tech. We're playing Texas Tech. We're beating that ass. We're scoring. We're running it up and down the field. My hamstring on a high post. That was in like October. He ain't do nothing in the draft process. You know why? My hammy coach. We got lingering hamstring injuries. I'm not a kinesiologist. Kinesiologist? Is that the people that know the body?
One of them.
Yeah, one of them.
There's a lot of
I'm not a kinesiologist. But I do know that if you have a tragic knee injury, it does put a lot more strain on other muscles.
For sure.
For sure.
Particularly the hamstring, maybe.
Especially
if we tore that. I think the PCL is the one in the back.
Yes.
Also, don't we take some hamstring stuff to fix some of that other stuff?
Depending on how bad the tear is, typically.
I told you we tore all three of them. So probably pretty bad.
So yeah, I would imagine.
So then what I'm saying is he is the best wide receiver in this class, but man, does that medical. I'll put a big blue dot on the board. You see it? Man, that medical scares me. I don't know if I would. So I think I would take Carnell Tate if I needed a first-round wide receiver. Now, here's how this discussion gets real, real layered for me. I would if I were a GM, I would probably apply drafting best player. I definitely would, especially in the first round. Best player available at whatever position of need that I have. Now, if I went into this second day, day three type of deal, and I looked at this and I said, hey, I actually need like an X body type. Like, it'd be great to have a wide receiver, but I need an X body type. I think the best overall X in this class is Jordan Tyson, but I just told you I wouldn't spend a first round grade on him. I think Carnell Tate's more of a Z body type in the NFL. So I probably look at like Chris Brazel, round two.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? Like day two, maybe not even round two, day two. Find value there for a guy that I think can really play outside the numbers and play X on Sundays. And then if I needed a Z body type, I'd probably scout day two Jeremy Bernard.
Yeah.
I think Jeremy Bernard's got a T. Higgins career on his way. I like just dominating the slot, being a guy finds ways to get open. Holy hell, he had 8 for 75 today and does that like 12 out of 16 weeks. And next thing you know, he's a 1,000-yard receiver. I think that can happen for him. And then if I needed like a yak specialist, you know what I'd do.
Mm-hmm.
Yakariah Branch, I'd just do that.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to sound crazy. I don't think the Mekhi Lemon kid is like that great after the catch. I think he's great at the point.
He is.
My God, is he great at the point. I told you that. I think he's got the best hands in the class. But, man, I don't necessarily love the overall tape there. T. Higgins, I know, is a little taller and slender than my man Bernard. But
yeah.
from a slot length, able to get it done, don't know if you're a Z or an X, but, man, you're a baller.
I mean, Mekhi Lemon is so good at the catch point that I had no idea he was that small. Yeah. I thought he was much bigger because when I watched him, he felt that big over the middle of the field. Like, that dude catches everything. I think I saw a stat where he, over his entire college career, he had 2 drops, I want to say.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, he's got great hands.
Great hands. There's a play where he's catching an RPO slant, and I thought it hit his chest, but he plucked and tucked it so fast that it looked like he body caught it.
Wow.
Yeah. I had to, like, slow-mo it in there on the projector to just, like, really see what was happening. But he... so quick that I thought he caught it off his pads. I think it's a great linebacker class.
Okay, I was about to ask.
A really great linebacker class. I think it's really deep at defensive tackle. Though I will say this, and we got a bunch of ball knowers watching right now, so I want y'all to give me an answer here, you guys as well. Did anybody in the defensive tackle class during their entire, even I would go career, maybe even last year, just go last year, did any defensive tackle completely take over the game like Lee Hunter did?
I was about to say
against Oregon in the playoffs, because that kid for 2.5 quarters, it was like, what the hell are we gonna do today?
Yeah,
what you gonna do is not run anywhere near him, because I don't have an answer. I watched Peter Woods today, and Peter Woods has moments of flash, but never a moment where it's like we can't have offense today because that dude's out there.
What I'm
asking is, like, he's the only one in my mind that has. I need another name because, in my opinion, to be a first-round defensive tackle, you have to be able to do that in college football.
Yeah.
You have to be a guy that has completely shut it down.
They definitely don't have that from the interior. I think this was more of an edge.
I also think a guy like Caden McDonald never had the opportunity. There's too many good players on Ohio State's defense that none of these guys felt this way. Because every 5 seconds, you're watching somebody new, and most of the time it's Caleb Downs.
Well, I also think that the upper ceiling of these defensive tackle prospects is not necessarily as high as in years we've seen in past.
It's a great point, which is why I think the floor is really high. I think it's deep.
Yeah.
I think it's deep. Listen, I think all these guys are really, really good. These are defensive tackles I feel as if I've got a scout. Peter Woods, Lee Hunter, Cade McDonald, Kristen Miller. Caleb Banks is a medical guy. That's going to scare the piss out of me. I wouldn't do it. Grayson Halton from Oklahoma. Big, thick fire hydrant, can move. Rayshon Benny from Michigan. And Big Citrus, Dominic. Big Citrus. Is anybody still 3-4 and True Zero in the NFL? Anybody True Odden?
I don't think so.
I think we're just throwing a bunch of freaks up there nowadays, aren't we? Aren't we rotating like seven twitchy monsters?
Yes.
Isn't that what the Eagles do? Isn't that what Seattle does? Isn't that what kind of we're going for?
Yeah. All right. Pretty much.
All right. So yeah, we'll get more into D tech. I think it's really, really deep. I just don't, apart from Lee Hunter, who again is probably gonna be a shade tech, doesn't even like project as a great pass rusher, which is more of like premier first round draft picks at this position seek out to be. Really deep. Don't know if there's a guy that completely takes it over. Tim Keenan getting mentioned in that. Again, I felt like there were days where, man, he requires a lot of attention from a mass perspective, but never like we can't do nothing. 96 done got us locked up.
But is that something that you would expect every draft class? I feel like that's one of those things where it's like, man, that's a once every few classes prospect. Like I personally don't feel like there's been one of these since you had Jalen Carter. And that's, you know, three or four draft classes.
And I feel like in that class, when they're like three of them, is that the Fisk? What Braden Fisk class?
Braden Fisk was the next class.
The next class?
24
I feel like there was a couple in that class.
Yeah, I mean, it was there for a little bit. You had a little bit of a run at defensive tackle. Like Mason Graham, when he came out, was a really strong prospect of his position.
You're right. Mason Graham is the last one for this.
Okay. I think cornerback. I think corner's really, really deep.
Yes.
I think corner's really, really deep.
Very deep.
Like, Dalen might be like a third round draft.
I know. Yeah, my take's not going to pan out because of this.
It's crazy. I mean, the Igman Nosen kid, I came in here raving about him the other day. Like, it's hard to stand down on Ohio State's defense. And I kept watching, like, damn, one back in there flashing. Great football player. I think it's okay at wide receiver, running back, and tackle. I think it's just okay. The Fano thing is freaking me out, man. Freaking me out from a standpoint of, am I wrong?
Yeah. Like, I watched, everybody else is on board.
I know. I'm not. Hey, you know who's not? George Foster. Mm. Say what you want about some of his tweets, but my man knows ball.
Hell yeah.
You know what I mean? And knows that position for sure.
Oh, definitely.
I think it's bad at quarterback, tight end, and safety.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not – I mean, it was kind of bad at tight end last year, too. It was, all right, there's Tyler Warren and then – Who else are we going to get? This year,
the Loveland kid was good last year.
Colson was surprising last year. Like, he exceeded expectations. I don't think anyone really came into the class thinking this is a really good prospect as well. It was kind of the Tyler Warren show. But, I mean, it's as far as the sexiness of it goes, there's not a whole lot of names this year. And that might be a product of what we talked about going back to the college football as general.
Now, here's what I will say. If you love – I'm one of those guys where, and I think this happens to everybody, where you go watch somebody else, you go to watch somebody else, and then you end up just watching the other guy that's on the field doing crazy stuff. You go to watch Carnell Tate, and you can't stop watching Jeremiah Smith. You cannot. I had a bad typo in a tweet today, or else it'd still be up. But I told the boys today, we're going to have to find a new word other than generational for him, because we beat that one into the ground, and I'm okay with that, like I told you before the show. We beat GOAT in the ground. There's like 1,000 GOATs, really. It's greatest of all time. It's not greatest of all time. We've beaten generational into the ground, so we're going to have to find something new on him. By the way, I don't believe that Tony Tate no more after watching some of that stuff. Holy hell. I tried. Even I said in the middle of it, I was like, all right, this is crazy. But he's a great, well-rounded football player. The Jeremiah Smith stuff is just
– yeah.
Whew, a man that large shouldn't move like
Look,
that.
When you have a Falcons fan approve the Julio Jones comp, we don't let that fly, all right? Might, but this one,
might,
I'm like...
He might be better.
All right.
Julio
Let's give this one some more time before we just start deeming that one, all right?
Remember, Julio was in college 17 years ago when the league was completely different.
Yep. I mean, I think they were still playing with fullbacks.
Yes. Yeah, Alabama. Patrick DeMarco was rocking with the Falcons.
Yeah. Leonard Moore, can't stop watching him,
really
the corner from Notre Dame. They let him travel with Mekhi Lemon. It's good tape. It's really, really good tape. Also, it's good tape for that's why you don't travel. Mm. This is probably why you don't do that very often, because like the only successful offense USC got was on busted coverages, because we were trying to get out of traveling because of whatever they're doing, And then we try to get into cover three, but we got corners trying to flip-flop fields, and it's just it's a nightmare sometimes. But other than that, they shut him down. It's 4 for 74, and he got him a couple times on some slants. But you're in there at the nickel playing slot, like following there. It's not like traveling outside the numbers, where when you play bump and run at the nickel spot, he's got a two-way go. When I play bump and run at the wide outside the numbers, you have the sideline as your friend. There is no friend in that nickel spot, so we kind of get beat sometimes, and that's what happened to him. But man, that kid, whew, he is really, really good. Mark Fletcher, every time I watch him, I'm like, what is this?
Yeah,
that guy.
You talking about all these upcoming prospects for next year just really like hammers home the fact of like, and I actually heard this between Todd McShay and Bill Simmons about how this NFL draft class is so boring. It feels that way.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, the juiciest story that they talked about is, where does Jeremiah Love go? And really, that's not even that crazy.
I can't even bring myself to watch him, because I'm like, I know what you are, buddy. I don't need to watch it. I know you're transcendent and you're great, and we got to figure out what's running back two.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I know what you are, Bubba.
But then you look ahead at, like, next year's draft class, and I know that we do this all the time when we start looking ahead, because nothing's set in stone yet. But when you think about the potentials of next year, of like, what the quarterback class could look like, what the running back class could look like, what the wide receiver class, I mean, there's going to be a whole lot of storylines next year, potentially, compared to what this year is.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the 2027 draft class has been circled since they were freshmen.
Yeah,
like, I mean, since Ryan Williams did his thing against Georgia, that's basically been like, just wait till this year's class gets in the NFL.
I mean, McShay said it himself about how many teams in the NFL right now are like not punting on this year's draft class, but they're setting themselves up to where they know the 2027 draft class is the one that you want to cash in on.
Hmm. Yeah.
You think that has anything to do with like, a lot of those guys are three and duns, though. But, like, staying back, being able to pay kids to stay in college, it pushes classes back.
For sure.
And I think we're finding the residual effects of that this class and next class, where guys are older. Mm-hmm. We talked about this with a GM in Indy. He's like, it's either a three and done or a six and done. There's no in between. There's guys that have been in college forever, or guys that were blue chips, like pick and stick, done.
I think the Mesidor is going to be like 26 by the draft.
Yeah, and this is what I'm saying. Mesidor 26, Ruben Bain 3 and done.
Mm-hmm.
From the same school.
Yep.
And I don't think there is a like a fifth-year guy anymore. Or a four, you know what I'm saying? Right, like a guy stayed 4 years.
The in-betweeners.
That guy's staying in college forever. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So that's what it feels like right now. All right, I'm good on the draft talk. Tony, man, I can't wait to watch that guy for two more years. Biggest leapers.
Let's do it.
Not biggest sleepers, biggest leapers. Who's going to take the biggest leap in 2026? I nominate. I don't know what happened there. Ain't worn that sucker in a minute. I nominate Ryan Williams half-heartedly.
Really? Okay.
Maybe returning to freshman form. However, this is why I don't believe it. I am, at this point, I'm going to have to be proven wrong, and I'm willing to be done so. I think Ryan Williams is what I'm calling a jackpot receiver. Did you ever play jackpot growing up?
Oh, yeah.
You know where everybody just kind of lines up underneath the ball, it's coming down, and whoever jumps the highest and can high point that sucker is great at it?
Yep.
Whew! Ryan Williams is jackpot draft pick one. All right? He is the best at it. He's got immediate spring, immediate jump. But you know what he really struggles with? He struggles when he has to bend routes and run towards the ball. He struggles when he has to run across and take it over his shoulder and catch that ball. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of drops there. But, man, when you let it act like when it's coming directly towards his face, he catches it really, really well. I had to stop myself there.
By the way, it's Ryan Coleman Williams now.
Huh?
Yeah, he changed his name.
He changed his name.
And number, right?
I think I care.
Anywhere in one now?
I have no idea.
Either way, Ryan Coleman Williams? I think I don't know if we're going to actually have the resurgence, because I do think we struggle. And that's why year one we were great, because that's what Milroe was great at. He's a four-verts merchant.
Oh, for
that's
sure.
What Milroe does. It's like, oh, I'm not going to run. Boom, throw a nuke.
And I never gave this take full-fledged. In fact, I think really the only person I delivered it to was Kirby ahead of last season, where even though how good Ryan Williams was in his freshman season, when you kind of went and looked back at the numbers – it wasn't all that special. It wasn't all that, this guy is on par with Jeremiah Smith.
We need a soundbite for reckless speculation, or I'm trying to sculpt a take. Please don't clip me. You ready?
Yeah.
I'm trying to sculpt the take. Please don't clip me.
Okay.
Ryan Williams made too much money and never got better.
When did he make, like, early freshman?
Oh, freshman. Dude, he was 17 years old on the face of NCAA. He's paid. He is a paid man. Okay?
And not then, a horrible take.
Like, here's why, again, horrible. It could be a horrible take. I don't know nothing about him from a working standpoint.
Right.
But here's what I do know. We've been in college 3 years, and has the body changed?
No.
Have we gotten any bigger?
Doesn't seem like it.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
I think it's also...
Again, complete reckless speculation. I don't know nothing about
right,
the kid.
Right, right, right.
I just watch his play, and everybody's searching for reasons why it's deteriorating. And I gave you the real one that I believe in, which is we were running a lot of vertical schemes. Now we have to run deep overs into coverage, and we're not very great at doing that right now. Also, we went from playing really more of a Z body type to now playing in the slot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's different for us as well.
Definitely that, as well as, could it also be that the hype around Ryan Williams was a little bit too quickly anointed?
No, dude. The stuff freshman year after the catch was dynamic.
For sure. For sure. There's no denying that. I mean, just go watch Georgia-Alabama 2024 to see that. But it felt like kind of after that one game, he was anointed as, all right, he's the best receiver in college football. No one else can touch him. And, yes, he had a solid season, but it was kind of just assumed that he's this other generational worldly talent where those deficiencies were still there. He had drop issues his freshman year. Now, obviously, it was really bad last year, but I think the flaws in Ryan Williams was always there, and I think people just kind of ignored them because, man, look at what he does after the catch. Look at what he did against Georgia. Look at this catch against Oklahoma. Like, the moments far outweighed the overall substance of his freshman season.
Still had some tough catches in 25. I mean, there's a play against Georgia where Ty's rolling left, and he gets smacked by Kyron Jones and catches the football. So there are moments there.
Correct.
There still are a lot of flashes.
Yeah.
We'll be serious. It'll be interesting to see. I also think his play style, if Keon Colbert, or the quarterback, Keelan Russell.
Oh, Keelan
if
Russell.
Keelan Russell wins that job, he can be like a extend the play playmaker type
off script.
Quarterback off script, and Ryan's great at that. So we could 100%. See a resurgence there because of quarterback play.
No doubt. I will nominate Bryce Underwood.
Oh.
You know,
why? Because he actually got a quarterback's coach?
Well, you know, I hear that he's kind of like Cam Newton, so that's really piqued my interest at the moment. But no, in all seriousness, I think that his true freshman season went about the way that I thought it would, knowing what Michigan had on the roster, especially offensively, and knowing what it usually looks like when you start a true freshman at quarterback in college football, especially in that conference. A lot of raw attributes, nothing really felt too refined, but there were certainly moments where you saw what Michigan was buying in on and all of that stuff. So
it just got so scaringly bad at the end.
It did.
Mechanically. Like, mm-hmm. I wrote it in my notes. We went from being a really, really fluid, like, smooth athlete to making me go, ugh.
But I think that's the risk that you run when you put your true freshman in that
and
situation.
And you scar him up.
What I'm saying. So that's why I maybe a little hesitant to throw this one out there. But I do feel like he is a prospect that is only going to continue to get better. So I'm banking on that one this year. I don't know how big the leap is going to be, but I think it's going to be one of those where, especially once all the quarterbacks clear out in college football, he's going to be the guy talked about heading into 2027.
Arc Raiders leaper big. Who do you got for me?
I'm nominating the Tennessee Volunteers defense. I think that...
It is true. Was he in the... He wasn't in the facility in that video,
it
was he?
His video, I'm pretty sure. So, yeah, the off-the-field thing happening earlier in the offseason doesn't help the case.
At least it wasn't a powdery substance.
Fair. So,
you know. Or anything coming out of a needle.
We got football back now. Maybe we're just on a strict schedule.
Would you prefer that?
Obviously not. the baseline of, well, at least it wasn't one of the hardest drugs ever.
Facts.
You treat that situation. Facts. I'm nominating the Tennessee Volunteers defense. I think adding Jim Knowles to this roster will kind of increase the tackling abilities of them. The secondary was a mess last season. It's no secret.
Seven new bodies.
Yeah, it's no secret that the fact that Tennessee struggled mightily last year on the defensive side of the football. I think adding a fresh face in Jim Knowles, I think some of the guys that they've added, the edge rusher whose name I'm forgetting right now, who showed a lot of promise his freshman year.
Oh, yeah.
It's Chaz.
Coleman.
Chaz Coleman. I think Chaz Coleman will add a lot of potential to this defense, so I'm nominating them to have a major leap in 2026.
You're not worried about year one with Knowles? Being a little
it
too
is
complicated.
A little thing.
It could.
It's picture card defense, meaning like it's one sound for the whole thing.
Right. I mean,
that's why it's so tough.
Well, yeah, again, this is the spring. This is speculation. But I think that we could be sitting here this time next year and go, man, that Jim Knowles hire really, really helped Josh.
So I'm skeptic of the year two or year one buy. Can I give you a year two stock I'm buying, despite the fact that he just lost two first-rounders on the line?
Go ahead.
Corey Weatherman, or Heatherman, down there at Miami.
Ah.
We watched them, and they were very dude-based defensively last year. Mm-hmm. Until the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then the playoffs, this dude was dusting off some damn schemes. He was out here working. Also, dude comes from the Sig tree. I would imagine they're going to get chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to have time to install the chaos. You know?
Right.
We can't be trying to do it year one. Then we're going to have a bunch of busts. And we didn't have to do that last year at Miami because they had a bunch of dudes.
Yeah.
Well, they still got dudes. At least they got a lot of them. I think year two down there in Miami on the defensive side of the football is going to be something to behold. I think they were scratching the surface schematically in year one with Corey.
I'll stick with your Tennessee theme, Christian, and I'll go with David Sanders.
Ah.
Started the year with an injury, didn't get off to the start that many people had hoped he would. What you got?
I just got to say, so I can get something off my chest. When you see board drills of any kind,
I know
when this. You see a dude in a four-point stance on the defensive line who looks like he weighs 260 pounds, and you ask yourself, why would that guy ever be in a four-point stance on any given down other than goal line situation? There's your answer. That's what that is supposed to simulate. It is supposed to simulate everybody knows you two are about to bang heads to start practice and set the tone. If you ever see a video like this around football, understand that it's about nothing other than physicality. Sure, I want you to have good feet and hand placement. I want to coach up all the perfectness of it. But it ain't realistic, or like, it ain't real football. That's not what we're simulating. What we're simulating is, it's spring practice. Get your ass ready. We got to go. We got to set the tone right now. So when David Sanders volleyball spikes a grown man in that clip, I don't want to hear old former NFL guys start talking about footwork, hat, and hand placement. It's actually a bad rep. No, it was there to set tone. It was there to be about physicality. And my God, if the sophomore don't want to do that right now. And by the way, it was, you heard me throughout his entire high school process. Mm-hmm. The only thing I ever questioned was, oh man, like, we're a great athlete, but are we violent?
Yeah.
Are we a mother? And that's what he is now, or at least is trying to be. Mm-hmm. And if we try long enough, and we're that gifted, buddy, we're going to figure it out eventually.
Yeah.
So, sorry, I had to get that off my chest.
No, it's fine. And I know Chad's saying I'm falling for some spring propaganda. I don't believe that to be the case.
No, sir. Watch the tape last year. Yeah. It's great.
At the end of last season, when we finally got our first few starts under us and we got to, like, we started building some confidence in ourselves, it looked like everything that was promised about David Sanders. And I think that now entering year two, we've cleaned some things up. We've got, like, half a season of full starts with us now. I think he's going to be one of the cleaner prospects that we have at offensive line.
Chad, talking about J. Will fell for the video on IG. Guess who else did? This guy. I loved it. I was like, man, this guy loves playing offensive line. Guess what? And a lot of dudes that gifted athletically that love playing offensive line. I don't know if I've ever watched Trent Williams be like, damn, this is his favorite thing ever. This guy loves this. I think he just likes beating the shit out of people. That's why he's great at it. And guess what? He's super gifted. That guy might be one of the best athletes to ever play the position. David Sanders is kind of like that. I love David Sanders. Enough of that.
My next nomination for most improved this year is Darian Mensah. Now, hear me. I know that some people were very high on Mensah last year. I think that there's a lot of flaws that came with his game at Duke. Now, you can argue that that's because you're playing on Duke. There's a lot of deficiencies there. I think he forced the ball one too many times last season and threw a lot of turnover-worthy picks. My assumption is that you get on a better offense with a better roster. He is probably going to have a much, much better season. I think that he will have a big leap this year.
He brought the best part of Duke's offense with him.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So I think that he will have a massive leap in 2026.
We're big Mensah maniacs around here. There was a nickname, the Mensiah. How do y'all feel about that?
You know,
we're workshopping it.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about crossing the religious figures with football players, but, you know, I don't hate it, I guess.
Okay. It's early. It's early.
It at least, like, flows well with his name. Like, I could see it.
Okay. I'm not saying print the shirts yet. I'm just saying we're workshopping.
No, workshopping.
Let's stay in the ACC. Miller Moss, year two with the Whisper.
I don't know.
Year three? No, it is year two. It is year two.
It's like year seven of college career.
Yeah. See, I feel like
he was in JJ McCarthy's class, by the way.
Yeah. Ooh, wow. I feel like guys like that are kind of the...
He was in Drake May's class, by the way.
I feel like guys like that are kind of the prospects that they are by this point. Like, if you haven't figured it all out by now, or are we going to have the magical year seven development? Like, for as much as we talk about, like, Carson Beck was Carson Beck last year. It wasn't like he added a new layer to his game.
I mean, Miller does make some throws.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure, he's talented. I just don't know, like... Is there another level for Miller Moss to take? I don't think there is.
If there is, the Whisperer is going to find it.
I would more so have to go take a look at what Louisville's got on the rest of the offense.
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's why I think Louisville is going to, like, they're going to be a 9-win football program in that conference, period. If you don't know this, by the way, Jeff Brohm and Louisville have more wins over the last 3 years than anybody in ACC football. Like, they're really, really good normally, year in, year out, no matter what's going on.
Interesting.
Really played that off.
No, I'm serious. I'm going interesting because I was told that for the last 5 years that Clemson's the premier program in the ACC.
Oh, that's what you're doing. I mean, they won 9 out of the last 11 ACC
titles. That's fine. I did it. So I
yawn that.
Jeff Brohm is the Lincoln Rileys of Kirk Cignetti's.
I don't know where that's coming from either. You guys have completely sidetracked the point here.
I don't hate
all that. I'm trying to say is, guys, Jeff Brohm's won a lot of football games in that conference over the last 3 years, and I've never, ever, ever, ever heard him give his football program expectations like he has this offseason. He is quoted as saying, basically, why can't Louisville be a playoff team? Why can't we be one of these programs? Why can't we do this? And I think that's alluding to the fact that he thinks he might be able to do. You don't say that if you think you're going to be an 8-4 football team.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't. He never. I know he brought ESPN down there to talk about him being a whisperer, but he don't do this normally.
I think
he is not a quotes guy.
I think this is also I need to start posturing myself to get talked about ahead of the season, so that when we are ultimately 9-3, it's not brushed off as, yeah, that's ACC Louisville. It's more, okay, that's a Louisville team that is respectful and all those things.
Like, people are expecting Dante Moore to take a massive leap. Are you? I'm not worried. I am worried. I'm kind of worried about the offensive coordinator turnover.
I don't know.
I'm not even worried about that. I'm just trying to think of.
And we lost two really, really good offensive linemen. Maybe three. Did. The center out.
Now, the wide receiver room is really good still. Like, our weapons are solid. We do lose Kenyon Sadiq.
If they stay healthy, Jonathan.
We get Evan Stewart back, hopefully, from his injury. Didn't have him all of last season. So there's reason to believe that the offense as a whole could take a step forward. But I'm just trying to envision, like, how big of a leap is there for Dante Moore to take now?
That's my question, because he's also one of these guys where you're getting up there in experience. This is his fourth or fifth year in college football. Like, he's not one of these new guys. What is the availability for another leap here? Like, that's my question for a lot of these fourth, fifth, and sometimes sixth-year guys. I don't know what the next step is necessarily for Dante Moore. It felt like he was an NFL product coming out of last season until he ultimately decided to stay.
To me, the last infinity stone for Dante is to do what Mendoza did, which is finish these games that you're struggling in better in the fourth quarter and stronger.
Sure.
He did this against Iowa. He did. He had a great throw down the stretch against Iowa, did Dante. But that's, to me, where we're lacking. Now, it was to start the game against Indiana in the playoffs. But other than that, I think there was a – he was great in the overtime against Penn State. But down the stretch, I thought he was just – the other guy was better than us maybe in the fourth quarter.
I mean, that's understandable. But again, like, I don't know if that's
all right, Hunter Lacy's trolling in the chat at this point. Hot take.
He's never been a Dante Moore guy,
though. Take the job from Moore at some point this season?
Probably not.
He did call. He did call Marcus Mariota and ask if he could wear an 8. After calling
Dylan Gabriel. Why are we getting approval from Dylan Gabriel?
Well, he had to get Marcus's number from Dylan.
Okay.
Here's the real question.
Did number 8 get retired? And I don't remember that. Like,
but I think it's more of a pay your dues and respect thing.
You just pay respect to it.
Oh, like, what? Just find another number. Rocky Holmes shit.
You know me. Or also, just wait till you're actually starting to.
Yeah, this year, not that big of a deal.
Nah, he's going to the job. Hunter Lacy said it.
Oh, okay.
All right.
The last name I'll give for biggest leaps this year, and this has been a trend at this program for a long time, especially at this position. When it comes to year three leaps, Chris Cole, the Georgia linebacker.
I thought we were going to talk Julian Sand.
Julian Sand is certainly worth mentioning in this conversation. Arch Manning's worth mentioning. But Chris Cole, year three linebackers under Glenn Schumann, the leap is pretty drastic.
There was a Julian Sand take that made me close a video today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I watched a very, very, very prominent analyst. Now, he might work for one of them three- or four-letter companies that may or may not have TV rights. But I heard a very, very well-known college football analyst today say something along the lines of, well, you know, Ty Simpson's a first-round draft pick this year, but in other drafts, he may or may not be. Like, for example, if Julian Sayin were in this draft, he would get drafted ahead of Ty Simpson. Okay. All right. I think it's a little bit crazy. I think Julian Sayin's got a lot of growth left to have as a quarterback, especially after having just watched four or five games of Cornell Tate. Leave it at that. He's great, accurate. But
very accurate.
There's not a lot of horsepower there, man. There's not a lot of wow. There isn't. Huh. You know what I mean? It's not a whoa.
Right.
NFL's about whoa. You know what I mean? All right. There we go. Let's go to local hour.